placing a book on the index of prohibited books in no way guarantees the suppression of its message. In school, we venturesome ones always use the index as our recommended reading list, and I suspect it may have been the same in those days. Anyway, a young Dominican friar, Giordano Bruno, 1548-1600, obtained a copy of the forbidden volume. Inspired by this cosmic vision, he began preaching sermons on a sun-centered universe. Only he went beyond Copernicus and foresaw many such sun-centered universes, solar systems, scattered throughout the stars. Isn't it possible, he asked, that each sun might possess its own Earth-like planet, inhabited by intelligent creatures? Far ahead of his times, he not only abandoned geocentricity, but heliocentricity as well. Quote, in the universe, no center and circumference exist, but the center is everywhere. End of quote. An infinite universe. To really appreciate Bruno's imprudent behavior, you must remember the Dominican friars, on orders of the papacy, had created the Inquisition, whose sole purpose was to root out heresy. And now, from within their own ranks, comes these wild, heretical speculations about an infinite universe filled with other Earths. This was worse than Copernicus, a direct attack upon the theology of St. Thomas Aquinas, himself a Dominican. This upstart friar would subject the Dominican order to ridicule throughout the church. The heresy seekers nurture heresy within their own bosom. The Grand Inquisitor himself issued the edict. Silence him. Fortunately, Bruno had enough advanced warning to escape Italy. He became a wandering scholar, teaching at Paris, Oxford, Wittenberg, other universities. Always the flamboyant Neapolitan of emotional eloquence, sharpened by a sarcastic wit, he assumed the role of gadfly, questioning every dogma or traditional philosophy. He said of himself, for love of true wisdom and zeal for true contemplation, I tire, torment, and crucify myself. End quote. It might be added, and everyone else in the vicinity. When he was once heckled by the rector of Lincoln College, Oxford, while lecturing on the Copernican theory, he wrote, would you learn with what incivility and discourtesy that pig comported himself, and the patience and the humanity of him who showed himself to be born a Neapolitan and nurtured under a more benign sky? Then he went on to describe Oxford as a constellation of pedantic and most obstinate ignorance and presumption, mixed with rustic incivility that would exhaust the patience of Job. End of quote. Eventually, he voiced his aversion to all organized religions and described most friars as asses who defiled the earth with their hypocrisy and avarice. How to win and influence friends. But apparently, he had no difficulty in his relationship with women. He once said, he satisfied his passions to the extent of his opportunities. but had not yet reached King Solomon's number. Even a philosopher must be forgiven his macho fantasies. As might be expected, he never did find a permanent teaching position. In his major metaphysical work, On the Infinite Universe and Worlds, Bruno suggested, our perception of the universe depends upon the place we occupy in space and time. There are as many possible modes of viewing the universe as there are possible positions. But no absolutes. Space, time, and motion remain relative. That is, space has no center, no boundaries. The same motion varies when seen from different stars. And since time measures motion, time too must be relative. Bruno had considerable effect upon Spinoza, who in turn influenced Einstein. To compound this heresy in the eyes of his religious brethren, Bruno advocated a pantheistic principle, or cause or deity, manifest in us and the universe. You cannot speak of two infinities. Therefore, it follows that the infinite God and the infinite universe must be one. Nature may be the outside of the divine mind or cosmic consciousness. However, he believed this mind or consciousness does not dwell in some remote heaven, but exists within every particle of matter. To avoid confusion, his particles are not the ghostly particles of quantum mechanics, but rather the concrete atoms of Greek philosophers, with this exception. He believed these particles were composed of infinitesimal monads, that is, indivisible units of energy with potentialities for life and consciousness. Each particle possesses its own degree of individuality, whereas its freedom consists not of liberation from law, but rather behavior according to its nature. And because every part strives for its own development, progress and evolution do occur in the universe. Everywhere in nature, we see a contradiction of contraries, polarities, dichotomies, opposite forces, and yet they do not rend the world asunder. For in the overall harmonious functioning of the cosmos, such contraries coincide, merge, disappear. Beyond the phantasmal diversity of nature endures a grand unity wherein all parts act as organs of one organism, the universe. Quote, it is this unity that enchants me. By her power, I am free, though thrall, that is, in bondage, happy in sorrow, rich in poverty, alive even in death. End quote. If that passage sounds a bit mundane, allow me to translate it in the spirit of his philosophy. Though I am subject to the laws of the universe, I am free, to express my own nature. And though I may suffer the ills of flesh and the injustices of society, I know the evil of the part becomes meaningless in the experience of the whole. And though I die, the death of the part becomes the rejuvenating life of the whole. Bruno's philosophy probably represents the first modern expression of organicism in the Western world. What is organicism? Well, it might be described as the spontaneous cooperation of all beings in the universe, brought about by their following the internal necessities of their own natures. In Whitehead's idiom, the atoms do not blindly run, as mechanical materialism supposed. Nor are all entities specifically directed on their paths by divine intervention, as spiritualistic philosophies have supposed. But rather, all entities at all levels behave in accordance with their position in the greater pattern of the organism, has the property of producing the highest values when the integrative level appropriate to them has arisen in the evolutionary process. But back to Bruno. After 16 years wandering in the cold climates of exile, Bruno yearned to see Italy, to feel again the warm Mediterranean sun. And so eager was he to go back home that he deluded himself into thinking his Dominican brothers would have forgotten him by now. And if they did question him, surely he could convince them of his religious sincerity. Indeed, he had been away too long. When invited to Venice as a guest and teacher of a prominent family, he accepted, remembering Venice had a long, honorable tradition of defying the Inquisition. Soon after his arrival, the church authorities arrested him. When the Venetian government objected, the inquisitors defended their actions by asserting Bruno was a Neapolitan who had no citizen's rights in Venice. They deported him to Rome. So much for honorable traditions. If Bruno had been an ordinary heretic, plucked off of the streets, the Inquisition could deal with him summarily, using appropriate torture, if necessary, to obtain a full repentance followed by a swift penalty, usually imprisonment. Burning at the stake was thought to be a fitting punishment for unrecanted heresy, but it seldom occurred, at least not in Italy. Fear of the stake proved very persuasive. But Bruno, he was something else again. He could not be routinely tortured without arousing a storm of controversy among European intellectual circles. He had to recant of his own volition, renounce his own philosophy, denounce the Copernican theory, and beg to be embraced once again by the Mother Church. In short, his credibility had to be destroyed if he were not to become a martyr. Equal to the challenge, the Inquisition had developed a subtle form of psychological torture for their more illustrious heretics. Confine the prisoner to solitude. Before, between, and after intensive examinations. 1 year they might examine him 3 or 4 times. Then allow an entire year to go by before they visited him in his cell to discuss possibly the quality of prison food. 6 months later, they might question him for 24 hours about alleged heretical statements made 15 years ago. Next year, they pick up the questioning as though it continued from yesterday. A clean, sophisticated way to drive a person to repentance or insanity. This continued for 9 years. Finally, 8 heretical statements were extracted from his books, and he was asked to recant them. He refused, but offered to defend them against any theologian. Dear naive Bruno, still playing by the rules of a game that never existed. The Inquisition despaired of saving his soul. Pope Clement VII, quote, commanded and decreed that the cause be carried to final measure, end of quote. 9 cardinals signed the decree. Summoned for the last time before his inquisitor judges, Bruno was told in great sorrow, since he still persisted in his heresies, continuing, quote, impenitent, obstinate, and pertinacious, that he must be punished with the punishment deserved and delivered to the secular court, end of quote. The secular authorities always carried out the sentence. The church could not shed blood. When the verdict was read to Bruno, he replied, perchance, you who pronounce my sentence are in greater fear than I who receive it. On February 19th, 1600, they stripped him naked, tied his tongue, bound him to an iron stake on a piazza in Rome, and burned him alive in the presence of an appreciative audience.